Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where, as you know, I've done interviews for over 1,000 entrepreneurs. And when I go to conferences, people often will introduce me to people who they think I should interview or get to know. And I was at HustleConf here in San Francisco, Sam Parr's conference, and he immediately brought me to this guy and said, Andrew, you should meet him. And as soon as I saw you, Michael, I wanted to get to know you for two reasons. Number one, you had really cool hair, right? Environment of people where everyone was a techie. You had this like cool style. And you also had this sense of confidence about you that made me feel like you were somebody. Is that kind of a weird thing to say? Right?
Fair enough.
Like, yeah. I feel like, especially here in Silicon Valley, you feel that either people are insecure and like a little shaky and want to prove themselves or know that they're never going to, right? That insecurity. Or they have a sense of self and you feel like they've accomplished something or they're comfortable with who they are. Anyway, you had that in a room full of people who are just like, I don't know, maybe didn't all have it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Also, we had an interesting...
Any more compliments?
Well, here's the other thing. I did say, Sam, what are you introducing us for? And he said, look, this is the guy who co-founded Calm.com is the website. I heard a lot about it. And he said, you should get to know him. And immediately I met Michael Acton Smith and I said, hey, what about – and I brought up – you might remember this – some of your competition, right? I said, how are you doing compared to them? And I started drilling you for numbers. Like we were like nice and chatty and you were calm and comfortable and immediately I go into my hyper state. What are your numbers? How do you compare to them? Are you guys profitable? What? How come I never heard of you, but I only heard of your co-founder, the guy who created the million-dollar homepage? Like, blah, 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 blah. And then I said, oh, so impressive. I took a breath and I said, can I interview you sometime? And that was over a year ago, and we've been trying for a long time, and I'm really proud to have you on here, partially because you've got this real calm sense of being that I want to understand, and partially because you founded Calm, and the numbers that you shared with me were unbelievable. And also because you had this whole history before Calm.com of successes. And I realized, well, I was going to say, no wonder you're so comfortable in your own skin. You'd made it. But maybe that's not what it is. Maybe it's something else. We'll dive into that in this interview. And the whole thing is sponsored by two great companies. The first you've heard me talk about for over a year. A fantastic company. It's called TopTal. I'll tell you more about how they can help you hire your next great developer. And the second you never heard me talk about in a spot. Brand new advertiser. If you're into email marketing, you got to hear me talk about Drip. All right. But first, Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's talk about the superficial. Am I at all right about this whole sense of calm? And forget calm. Calm is kind of like it's more of a that's part of your branding. What about this sense of comfort in your own skin? Am I right? Do you feel that you've achieved that at this point in your life?
I think I've built a lot of businesses and I've had some successes and some catastrophic failures and learned a lot along the way. So I do feel pretty comfortable in my skin. I've got a lot more I want to do, many, many more adventures ahead. And I try and do them by staying balanced as I go.
When you want to do more, is it because you're living in San Francisco and you see people who are richer, more successful, better known than you, and you want to at some level achieve what they have? Or is there some other mission there?
You know, we only get one life. We've got, 20,000, 15,000 days left, spins on this incredible planet. I just want to do cool stuff, make a difference.
Cool stuff? Just for funsies?
Leaving a mark, meeting, you know, when you run businesses, you get to travel the world, you get to go to cool conferences, you meet amazing people. I mean, that's so exciting. It's so much, such a great way to go through life. You're learning stuff all the time. And, I love it. I love running and juggling different businesses. And, it's just a fun, cool thing to do.
And you are running a couple of other, actually one other business, right? Mind Candy?
Well, I'm not running Mind Candy at the moment. So I ran that for many, many years. We've got a great new CEO in place, but I'm the chairman of Mind Candy. And now I'm running Calm. I'm the co-CEO and co-founder with my very good buddy, Alex Chu.
Okay. The numbers. You guys, basically, here's what Calm does.
Straight I go to the website. Straight to the numbers.
Sorry?
Straight to the numbers.
Straight to the numbers.
Here we go. Let's get to the number.
I mean, I like your confidence, and I want to understand your journey. But let's like give people a sense of what you've built with this attitude. It's not just about being calm and kind of living through life and being okay with making $25,000 because you could live in one of these minimalist houses. You're really building something that's big, and a lot of people are participating and willing to pay for it. When I went to Calm.com the first time, all I saw was like this serene view of water and some music in the background. What I didn't understand was the the depth of it. I can go in for a free meditation session on there, or I can upgrade and pay, I think it's a monthly or annual fee, to do more intense meditation, guided meditations. That's the way the business works, right?
Yes.
How many people pay for that?
So we haven't announced the exact number of paying subscribers, but we're doing well north of $1 million a month. And very high margin. There's only 12 people on the team. We've raised $1.5 million in seed. We were doing about 10,000 downloads a day last year. We're doing well over double that this year. Most of it is organic. This is what we're really proud of. Huge, huge word of mouth going on because people love calm. And then we're riding this wave, this incredible societal shift that's going on around mindfulness and meditation and people taking more care of their minds. This physical fitness boom we've seen over the last 50 years, now we're seeing the same for mental fitness. And I just think that's such an exciting space to play in.
When you say organic, the only organic stuff that I see for you is you guys have fantastic investors. Jason Calacanis, the guy's got a mouth bigger than the building that I'm in right now, right? So you love having him, I imagine. Do you like having him as an investor?
He's great. He goes to war for his startups. And we've got Michael Birch. We've got Matt Mullenweg. We've got tons of great investors.
Tons. And every time I see a post about how Silicon Valley is embracing meditation, there's a mention of Matt Mullenweg meditating. You know, he's the founder of WordPress. So, of course, people want to mention him, and it adds credibility. And it says, and by the way, he also is an investor in Calm. So I get that. But beyond this whole Silicon Valley investors and entrepreneurs talking about meditating and saying that they're investing or partnering up with you, what other organic stuff are you guys doing?
So people love Calm. I think it's a really valuable state of mind that seems obvious, but we've kind of forgotten it, particularly in the last decade in the smartphone era. And, you know, you just need to walk down any street, go to any coffee shop, look at any bus stop. People are tapping away on their phones, and it's changing and rewiring our brains in incredible ways. They're extraordinary and amazing, but also if we use them in a mindless way, if we're slaves to our technology instead of masters of them, it causes tremendous, tremendous damage. This is why anxiety is on the increase, depression is on the increase, insomnia,
right,
stress.
But when people go through that, I get the pain that you guys are trying to solve. Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering, Michael, is do people then try Calm and then go tell all their friends about it? It doesn't seem like the kind of thing I'd want to rave about afterwards. It would just seem like something that would be, you know, indiscreet to even talk about or a little pushy to talk about after meditating.
I think that's a fair point. So I think meditation has had this baggage for many, many years. You know, it's an ancient wisdom. It's been practiced for thousands of years. And I think some of the baggage it carries recently has been people assumed it had religious connotations. They assumed it was woo-woo and ultra-spiritual or just for hippies. And this shift is happening recently as the neuroscience develops and the studies come out showing hard science how this impacts us and how it benefits many areas. And that's what's fueling the word of mouth. People are now proud to say they meditate rather than something they might have done privately.
I see. Kind of like if I spin, I'm very proud to say I spin. Or if I'm a marathon runner, I want everyone to know that I do long distances. You're saying meditating now has been elevated to that level and people want to share the fact that they're meditating and they say, I use Calm.
Exactly. And people realize, you know, it's like eating well or exercising well, looking after your mind is one of those important parts of living a good life. And so I think that's helping fuel the word of mouth growth.
Are you guys profitable considering you only have 12 people on the team?
Yes. Yeah. The business is very cash flow positive. And we're very proud of that. Now we're just starting to ramp up our spend, hiring a lot more people, moving into a new office. So it's really exciting time.
Interesting. All right. You know what? I had no idea. I've seen the site a long time ago. I mean, from the beginning, I think, back when it was called, what was it called? Like, Take a Break for 2 minutes or something?
Yeah, so Alex originally set it up. He's been interested in using technology to help people relax and calm down and meditate for a long, long time. And the initial site that he set up was called donothingfor2minutes.com. Really silly, quirky idea. It had millions and millions of visitors because people found it so difficult to do nothing for 2 minutes. If you moved your cursor or touched a keypad, it would restart the 2 minutes, spread like wildfire. And so that was the kind of signal that told both of us there was something big here.
I remember Alex from like Internet 1.0. He created a $1 million homepage, right? I think we even bought a few pixels of the $1 million homepage for my previous company. And I remember like the guy who bought it was excited for having scored a few pixels on this big, you know, this big site. I'm wondering, so I get his story. I'm wondering your backstory. I heard that you ran something called Hotbox. And I told you before we started this interview that I went to Internet Archives to search hotbox.com, and I came up with a naked woman and then a bunch of her friends who were also very naked. That's not the site. What was the site?
No, that I can say that had nothing to do with me. So this is way back. I just finished university in the UK and was looking for something fun to do. And we'd heard about this. This is about 1998. Me and my buddy had heard about this thing called the internet. It was just starting to take off. So we thought we could sell cool toys and gadgets online. And we thought we'd call the company Hotbox because the products were so hot, they were bursting out of the box. That was our quirky little logo. Registered hotbox.co.uk because we were based in the UK. And we didn't think it mattered that we didn't own hotbox.com. But it did matter because it was one of the world's biggest porn sites. And we got all this traffic to our site that didn't convert very well. My mum would go and tell all her friends to check out her son's new business, and they'd go to the wrong site. So they thought I was a porn baron for a little bit, but now everyone can see the funny side. And then we changed the name to firebox.com, and I learned some really valuable lessons about naming a business.
Yeah, what did you guys pay for com.com? That must have cost a pretty penny.
Yeah, that was a six-figure sum. The guy originally wanted about $1 million for it, but we got it for quite a bit less than that. But I think it's such a beautiful, simple domain name. And I love it because we are teaching meditation, but we didn't want to have a name that had too much of that baggage I was talking about earlier. Calm is universal. Everyone understands it. And I think it's a great platform to build this massive global lifestyle brand that we're aiming for.
You read a book called Doing Business on the Internet back in 1997. How did that influence the direction of your life?
So it was this huge tome, which I just read as if it was the most kind of amazing text ever, and just blew my mind. And so me and Tom Boardman, my business partner back then, we'd met at university, created the website. There was no Shopify then. There was no kind of tools to build or manage your email lists. Tom kind of hacked everything together from scratch, and that was the starting point. And nothing much happened because, you know, back in 98, there weren't many competitors online, but there weren't many customers either. So we had about one order a week, which wasn't great. And then we had our breakthrough moment when we invented this new product that took off like a rocket.
Before you invented this product, from what I can see here, looking at hotbox.co.uk in the Internet Archives, you sold a bunch of interesting gadgets like casino dice, exciting bottle opener. Not sure why it's exciting. You specifically say that. The shot glass chess set. Ah, was that the big one?
That was the turning point. Yeah.
So up until then, you were selling other people's products?
Yes. So because we didn't have any cash, we would basically list some products online. And if someone placed an order, we would then call up the supplier, have it shipped to our house, and then we'd send it to the customer. Took like best part of a month.
I see.
People were so excited about ordering online, they didn't mind. And we weren't able to take credit cards online. So people would go to a section of our page, print off a sheet that they'd fill in all their details, their credit card details. Then they had to fax that to us.
Oh, wow.
And I would sit at my desk and type in their credit card details into our little machine, and then put their order in a packet and send it out. It's a bit simpler now.
This bottle cap opener is really cool, actually. If I put it on top of a bottle cap, I slap the top. Do you remember this?
Yeah, the zap cap, I think it's called.
Zap cap, that's it.
Yeah,
I slap the top of it and the bottle cap pops right open. I don't know how that works, but I kind of want one of those.
That was great. Well, that was one of our best sellers back then. I think we sold about 7 in the year.
Yeah, actually, it is on the website. It says, gadgets and cool stuff, hot products, top 5. Number 1 is the zap cap.
That's great. All right. And now the website is called firebox.com if anyone's looking for quirky, fun, unusual gadgets and toys and gifts.
Do you still own it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so this chess set that did really well for you, who came up with it? Did you guys invent it?
Yeah. So that was me and Tom. We used to be quite geeky chess players at university. And we thought, how could we make chess more interesting? We love this idea of kind of smashing together two different things and seeing what happens when you merge them. So what if you mix chess with alcohol? And the shot glass chess set was born. So you play chess as normal, but the pieces are little shot glasses. And you might be, say, whiskey, and I might be vodka. And every time I capture one of your pieces, I have to drink it. So you've got this great inbuilt handicap system. It's the drinking man or woman's thinking game.
And it looks like what you did was you assembled a collection of shot glasses that already existed on the market. Am I right? And
yes.
And a board. Okay.
Yeah. And then we made a board that had to be alcohol resistant. Putting all of these 33 bits of glass in a box, we had to design the packaging, this foam, and then put an outer board around it. Managing that was pretty difficult. It was this huge box that we then shipped out, and it did really well.
And just like today, where I see you guys in the press a lot, you guys were good at getting press. What did you do to get people to cover you?
Yeah, so this was a really important learning for us. We learned the power of story. Journalists are fascinated by the human interest angle. So they love this idea of these two broke students or recent students living in this attic in Wales in the UK. And they just love the idea of this chess set that involved alcohol. So we wrote together a little press release. We sent it out to a load of journalists, and we got covered all over the place. We were in the local newspapers. We were on radio stations, magazines. And that was just incredible, that the PR that we got and the orders that flowed from that made us realize PR was going to be a key driver of the business. And it always has been in everything I've ever done.
So then why move on to Mind Candy? If you had this thing that's working, and it's still working to this day, I'm on the site right now. It looks beautiful today, by the way. Why shift?
Well, so I ran it with Tom for several years, and sort of around 2003, I started to get itchy feet a little bit, and I wanted to do the next thing. And I've always been a massive video game player. And I was seeing how the internet and games could merge. And what if you could play games not just with your buddy, but your friends down the street, or hundreds of people, maybe even one day millions of people could be playing games online. Mm-hmm. And I just thought there was a huge area to splash around in. So that's when I created Mind Candy. And Tom and some other friends continued running Firebox. And I set up this new business. And we created a game called Perplex City, which was this online-offline treasure hunt. We buried a treasure worth $200,000 somewhere in the world, and then we created clues across all sorts of different media. You'd get messages on your phone or by fax machine. We'd hide clues in newspapers. There were live events with helicopters and actors. It was this most incredible adventure and experience, and eventually someone found this treasure that we buried and won the prize.
Wow, and was it worth all that work?
It was probably the most creative thing I've ever worked on. It was just a fascinating experience. We raised about $10 million. We won a ton of awards. We got loads of press. But it was also one of the most complex things I've ever worked on. And that was its downfall. It just wasn't the commercial success that we were hoping for. And we didn't attract a large enough audience. So that was a really valuable lesson.
Yeah, I'm searching online to see if I can find old articles about it. That one's hard because Perplexity apparently comes up as a phrase in a lot of other websites from 2002.
PERPLEX, the word perplex, and then space city, CITY. Yeah. So,
It wasn't perplexitycardcatalog.com, was it? No.
Yes, so we created these cards that you'd buy like Pokemon cards, okay. And every card had a puzzle. And if you solved the puzzles, you got deeper and deeper into the mystery. So that's how we generated revenue.
But, All right. I see that now. Pretty cool. All right. Wow. And so you know what? I was going to ask, if that didn't work, then what did you do next? Especially considering how much money you raised. But let me take a moment here and then come back to it. And I want to tell everyone about a company that's brand new to me. It's called Drip, drip.co/mixerjuice.url. Do you know about them, Michael?
No, but I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
I will tell you more. You mentioned earlier that that email marketing is a big part of business as it's being done online today, of course, right? Every business needs to have email marketing. But email marketing is actually, it's the dumber way of doing things, right? Email marketing just means you have the ability to email people on a regular basis. Today, it's marketing automation via email that's the most exciting. And that's what Drip is about. Drip will keep track of everything your customers do on your site. What page did they visit? Did they download a book? Did they start reading the workbook? All that stuff, so that you know if you want to market to somebody via email, you're not sending the same message to everyone, but instead you're targeting the people who did some kind of an action. Like, download that workbook, watch a video all the way through the end. They're really good at this stuff. And the reason I know all this is because the owner of the company is Clay Collins. He said, Andrew, I'm going to buy an ad from you, but I want to show you. I'm excited. I just bought this company, Drip, and I want you to see what it does. And Clay's a guy who created lead pages. He's a great marketer. And so we did a screen share, and he started telling me this stuff. And Michael, I got to tell you, right here in my stomach, let me see if the audience can see, right here, I felt pain, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Because he was showing me all this cool stuff, like not only can you keep track of what everyone does, but you can send out an email, and if the email doesn't get opened, you can just check a box that says, resend it to people who don't open the email after X number of days. They said that they tried it, they got a 30% lift in click rates just by doing that. Yeah, you can do it with other software, but with Drip, one checkbox allows you to reach the people who didn't open the email that you sent a few days ago, so it's really powerful. They also do split testing via email, which my software doesn't do. It's maddening. I want to be able to say, here's the one email, test it to see which headline works, which body works, etc. Well, mine can't do it. Drip can do it. They also have these blueprints, kind of like landing pages. You don't have to create a brand new landing page from scratch. They said, why do you have to write a whole email sequence from scratch? If you're doing a webinar, we'll create all the emails that you need for the webinar. Just plug your name and your product in and make some adjustments so that it's yours, but it'll work. In fact, they even teamed up with Ryan Dice. Ryan Dice, a great marketer, and they said, we're going to copy your email sequence, okay? Ryan said, yeah, great. So now I and you and anyone who's listening to me can actually have marketing that works that Ryan Dice put together. You have a sequence that you could put together using a flowchart. If somebody opens this link, if somebody clicks this link, then send them that. If they don't, then do that. If they buy, then send this message. If they don't, then do that. All that stuff is beautiful. Shopping carts, they team up with every other shopping cart that you could possibly want, like WooCommerce, Stripe, eJunkie, Eventbrite. Somebody buys a ticket, you could go into Drip. So here's why it bothered me. Michael, I have for a year now said, I hate my email automation software. I've interviewed people who've told me that they use my software and they hate it. And we all feel trapped. And so I saw how good the software could be at Drip, and I thought, I wish I could get into it. I'm trapped. And the way that I asked Clay about it was, I said, Clay, you know, I could see that a lot of people in my audience, I didn't say me, Michael, I said, I could see a lot of people in my audience would like what you have to offer, but they can't switch because it's too hard to switch away from email providers, especially the old ones. The newer ones make it easier. He said, yeah, what a lot of people are doing is when they're creating a new list, they're doing it on Drip, especially since Drip will give you a free account so you can fully explore it, fully test it, fully see what's in there, fully use it for up to 100 people. And then you could just start transitioning. And he told me about how Drift was using it for one list but not for another. And I thought, I could do that. My audience could do it. If you're listening to me and you like what Drip is doing, do what I'm doing. I've got a brand new list that's coming out. I'm really excited about messaging bots. I'm going to build the list on Drip. If you have a new product and you want to build a new list for it, just go to Drip, drip.co/Mixergy. You'll get to use it for free. If you hate your email software and you want to experiment with something new, even if you just want to play around and see what's possible, go to drip.co/Mixergy. drip.co/Mixergy. They'll make it really easy for you to get started. In fact, they'll give it to you for free for up to 100 people so you can fully explore it. Then you could keep expanding if you want, and you'll get all this smart automation. I'm going to try it for my new list. I urge you to try it. If you're with a stupid email system, one that just lets you send out the same email to everyone, dude, then it's easy for you to switch over to Drip. If you're with marketing automation software and you hate it, just create a new account and play around with Drip. I'm doing it right now, and I urge you to go check them out at drip.co/Mixergy. Hey, Michael, I know I was kind of addressing you, but I was also kind of lost in my own world as I talked about it because I'm like a raving...
Good pitch.
What's the opposite of a raving fan? Raving...
Opposite of a fan.
Opposite. Raving hater of my email software.
Okay.
But you get trapped. You get trapped because all the tags are in there, especially with these old ones. You have no lock-in, by the way, at Calm, right? Doesn't that bother you? Like, I can hate my software, but I still pay them every month. Unless someone keeps using your software, there's no lock-in. They could disappear on you. They could go to a competitor. They could just stop meditating.
It's true, and that keeps making sure we make the product as amazing as possible and keep them. and adding new content, new meditations, new sleep stories, new music. So, yeah, it's working so far. And hopefully our people build up this deep relationship with the brand.
All right. You were telling us a moment ago that Mind Candy was not doing so well. What happened after that fail? Well, I don't know that it would be a failure, but what happened after that setback, let's say?
So it was, a pretty stressful time. We realized that Perplexity was not working. We burnt our way through a lot of cash. We were had less than $1 million in the bank. And the clock was
from
ticking.
10 million to less than a million?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that's a lot of money. We urgently needed another idea. I knew in the gut of my stomach, as most entrepreneurs do when something is just not working. So I was in coffee shops doodling and scribbling away, trying to come up with the next big idea, and had seen how kids were using the web, and realized there was something going on here. There was a new wave kind of breaking, and created something called Moshi Monsters, which were these little creatures that you could adopt and look after and play with online, a bit like Tamagotchi. And we launched the site, and kids loved it. It took about a year and a half before it took off, but from the early days, we felt there was something special there.
So they would go to the website, they'd see these monsters. They kind of look a little bit like apples or a little bit like bunny rabbits, but they're definitely their own unique creations, from what I'm understanding, right?
Yes.
And they would need to feed them and take care of them, which means constantly logging in and interacting and experiencing the development of these monsters, right?
Yeah, so kids love, one of a really popular play pattern for children is nurturing. They love to look after things. And so they had their own little monster. They could name it. As you say, they could feed it, play games with it. They would do puzzles. So there was a stealth education angle, and they were learning. And it grew slowly for about the first year and a half. We had to raise a little bit more cash. And then in 2009, it just hit its tipping point and just exploded. And we started getting one new site up every second. And
And crazy. The model for it as of 2009 was a subscription approach.
Yes.
What were they paying for, and how much was it?
So it was about $6 a month that parents would pay. And again, parents liked it because it was safe for their kids to play, and they were also learning. Kids loved it because it was fun and creative. And it was profitable very quickly. And as I say, it just grew like crazy. We got up to about $80 million in revenue. And
annual.
And about $17 million EBITDA. So about half came from subscription revenue and half came from physical products. And this is a similar model that we're applying to Calm. I love these businesses that have a digital heart, where you have a direct connection regularly with your audience. You make high margin revenue there. And then you create physical products that almost act as on-ramps or little marketing bombs that you throw out there that provide new ways for your audience to fall in love with your brand. And
what
then
were the physical products at Mind Candy, and what are they now at Calm?
So at Mind Candy with Moshi Monsters, we had toys. We sold 200 million trading cards. We had the number one selling Nintendo DS game, number one magazine for kids, books. We did a movie with Universal, a music album, all sorts of different products. Sold about $1 billion worth at retail value over the multi-year journey of Moshi Monsters. And then for Calm, similar, the heart of the business is this digital subscription. So people are subscribing and coming back to the app regularly. And then what we want to do is expand Calm, allow you to experience Calm many ways throughout your day. From it could be drinking a cup of tea in the morning, or listening to Calm music, or a story to help you go to sleep, or Calm virtual reality. Calm hotels one day, or retreats, or clothing, or books. We have our first book with Penguin.
You wrote it.
Yes, with Alex and the rest of the team. So ultimately, we want to build Calm into the Nike for the mind. You know, as I said at the start, in the way that Nike surfed the physical exercise boom, we want to be the brand that is there for the mental fitness boom that is growing like crazy right now.
I forgot the word that you used for the physical product. I thought it was something like a bomb or something, like a promotion bomb, or what was it?
A little marketing bomb.
Marketing bomb. So how does the physical become a marketing bomb for the digital?
So the book, for instance, you know, it's a bit unusual for a digital product, an app, to have a book. But we thought it was super smart. So we were paid a pretty hefty six-figure advance, which was great. And we make about, you know, a little bit of money on every book we sell. But far more importantly, every book out there is a chance for someone to talk about Calm or to share it with a work colleague or give it as a gift. And so many people discover Calm, or they take photos of it and put it on Instagram of the different pages. And it's a great way of getting not just free marketing, but marketing we actually get paid for. So an incredible way of getting customer acquisition. And then when we launch candles or the many other products that we're going to launch, each of these, whether people see them in shops or get given them as gifts, will be ways of bringing people into the heart of the business.
All this with 12 people only?
Yes, although we hired two new people this week, so we're up to 14 and hiring for about another 10. So pretty rapid growth at the moment.
How many of them are engineers at Calm of these 14?
So we have three phenomenal engineers who are incredibly overstretched. So that's a big part of our
hiring. Because they're doing iOS, Android, and web.
Yes, exactly. And okay. Super, super skilled and holding it all together.
So you told our producer, look, once we went into subscription, cash flow then started to turn positive. So $40,000 in sales the first month of subscription. We're talking about Mind Candy. $80,000 the second month. I'm wondering, what do we take from that? What's the difference between the first version of this company and the second version of this company? Not the external, the physical stuff, but why did the second one work where the first version of the company didn't work?
I think one of the key things was just simplicity. I'm a huge fan of stripping away complexity for the user, whether it's in a user interface or the benefits of your product. So Moshi was much simpler and easier to understand. For kids, it was adopt your own pet monster. And that was the little message that could be spread in playgrounds around the world. Perplexity took about half an hour to explain to someone. secondly, the business model. I love business subscription. There's a great book called The Automatic Customer. When you have reliable, recurring revenue, when you build something that people love, you have huge margin when it's a digital service. So same for Moshi, same for Calm. I think that's an amazing engine to have driving your revenue. And then, as I say, you supplement that with physical products that makes both flywheels spin faster and faster. And I think that's how you can build huge, global, multi-billion dollar brands.
You know what? John Warlow is the author of The Automatic Customer. He taught a course on Mixergy called The Automatic Customer based on what's in the book. And yeah, it's phenomenal. There's something about subscriptions, but there's also something very scary about subscriptions. You know, people are afraid to buy something by subscription because they think they're not going to cancel. They think that they've got this big weighty obligation. How do you overcome that?
You make sure what you're offering the customer is amazing, and you continually provide new content, and you go above and beyond what they expect. So look at Netflix. Once you subscribe to Netflix, very few people drop out because every month, every week, there's new content, and that's what you have to do. Subscription businesses fail when the entrepreneurs get lazy and they stop innovating and adding new content for their customers.
I remember one of the things John told me in that course was he said he thought that he should give someone a little bit of something in the first month and then a lot more the next month and so on. And he realized, no, you need that overwhelming intro with a lot of real value. You could then have a little bit less the second month, but don't hold back. Did you find anything else like that that helps with subscriptions, having done two successful businesses like that?
Yeah, learned a huge amount along the way. One of the key things is where you put the gate between your free and your paid service. And again, digital products, you can test and figure out exactly the best place to put that. We found that offering three price options was far more successful than two. We found that adding a lifetime service, an anchor that was very expensive, made more people comfortable paying the annual subscription. So Calm currently is about $60 a year, which we think is fantastic value. That looks very attractive compared to a lifetime of, $300 or $400. And just the psychology of pricing generally, people like to choose the middle of three options than getting caught up between just two options, whether it's on a wine list or whether you're choosing a holiday. So I think that's valuable for entrepreneurs experimenting with pricing.
I see. I'm wondering, when the first version of the business, Mind Candy, didn't work out, A lot of people would have just at that point said, you know what, I'm done with it. Especially this is after the what do they call it? Whatever, when the internet bubble burst.
The dot-com bust, the boom and bust.
Yeah, after that, like, everyone was a little bit depressed. It felt like there were no real possibilities to get rich quick anymore. And so people felt like maybe there's no opportunity to build anything of substance online. You had a failed business, actually. I held back on that. But you could have said, this is a failed business. I don't have the energy anymore to continue. I'm wondering where that came from for you. Why did you continue?
Well, because we were... And I was super excited about this new product that we wanted to create. And I could have paused Perplexity, given the little bit of money back to my investors and started afresh with a new cap table. But my investors had been with me on the roller coaster. They backed me from the early days. And I wanted to kind of show faith in them as they'd shown in me. So
you just felt an obligation to show them that they didn't misplace their trust?
Yeah, I think entrepreneurship is a long, long game. It's far more than just the business you're building at the moment. And I think being honorable and respecting your employees and your investors is very, very important. So I didn't want to restructure the business, and I wanted to continue with the investors that had been there from the start and the small team that had been working on Perplexity. We had to let some people go. And from the ashes, the phoenix was able to come out of the flames.
But knowing that you want to take care of your investors, knowing intellectually that there's some possibility somewhere and you should go look for it, is different from having the energy, the optimism, the confidence to go and pursue it. I remember talking to a VC soon after the bubble burst, and I said, how did you get through it? And he went and he showed me this book, big book. I forget what it was called, but it was a really big self-help book. And he showed me how he wrote the answers to all the assignments in the book to get himself back to confidence so that he could have the confidence to keep building his business and to keep looking after his investments. And I'm wondering for you, what did you do that allowed yourself to stand tall through it? Because I want to learn from it. We're all going to go through it. I know I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a very, very humbling, battering experience having a failed business or failed product with Perplexity. Lots of sleepless nights, lots of stress and headaches. And I think the reason I was able to kind of pick myself up was having a big vision. I think this is so, so important for entrepreneurs. I wanted to build the next Disney. I wanted this new idea, Moshi Monsters, to be remembered for decades. I wanted my grandchildren to play this game and experience it one day. So I was so excited about it. And having that huge vision and that massive mountain to scale is incredibly motivating, because no matter what obstacles and headache and nonsense you have to wade through on a day-to-day basis, you're going to find a way up that mountain, whatever it might be. And I think that's key. If you're an entrepreneur and you've got an idea and you don't have a big vision and you're just hacking away in the weeds, it's so much harder to pull yourself over those obstacles and those roadblocks you meet every single day.
Did you do anything to keep your mind focused on the next version of the business and keep it from getting lost and worry about all the mistakes you made in the first version and how you let people down? What did you do?
I wrote a fake newspaper article 10 years into the future of what would Moshi be like if it was this global phenomenon, and stuck that up near my desk. And that's kind of very, very motivating. And you kind of create a version of the world that hasn't happened yet. It's a bit like, you know, creating a mood board or vision. You know, The Secret has a lot of fans and a lot of detractors as well. But I love this idea of being positive and just believing you're going to make something happen. And chances are you're going to increase.
Where'd you get the idea to make this newspaper?
Just, I think, yeah, just, I don't know where that came from.
It just kind of came to you. And do you still have that paper now?
Somewhere in huge boxes I've got in storage of all the kind of scribbles and notebooks I went through on Moshi.
Or what did it say at the headline? What were you going to be at the end of this?
I think it was something like global Moshi, the next global phenomenon, or something like that. That was just
so
like,
you already had that idea while Perplexity was starting to go down.
As Perplexity was crashing and I knew it wasn't working, I was scribbling away and trying to come up with this new idea. So Moshi was just starting to kind of take seed and develop at that point.
You know what? If you had a cynical friend, they would say, Michael, it already exists. No, you're kind of referring to these other products, Tamagotchi, etc. They exist already. You can't go in and create another one already when one already exists. Why did you think that was okay?
Well, I'm a huge believer in looking at things that have been successful. You know, human beings, we're different, but we do respond in a remarkably similar way to the same stuff. I love a book by Robert Cialdini called Influence, The Power of Persuasion. And so it's really valuable to look back in history and see what kind of products have worked and what haven't. And what I love doing is finding something that has worked and then putting a twist on it. And putting that twist on it for a new audience. So Tamagotchi worked in a pre kind of web era. And we thought, what if I could take the elements, the nurturing, the play patterns that children loved about Tamagotchi and apply that to a new platform such as the web? And then what people have done now is applied those similar principles to mobile. And people continue doing that for forever into the future. And I think that's a really important thing that a lot of good entrepreneurs do.
Yeah, that's right. Tamagotchi, I guess I called it Tamagotchi. They were those little keychains. So you would just have this black and white or black and green type of thing in your pocket, and you would go to the digital black and green screen and feed your Tamagotchi. And I see. And you so said, I think I could do a better.
Super simple, but they sold tens and tens of millions of them. And so that made me question, what is it about that? Why? And it's down to this core need of nurture. And so, yeah, we kind of took some elements and were inspired by that, but also Cabbage Patch Dolls and Pound Puppies and Furby and many other kids' trends over the last few decades, and then took some inspiration and created our own thing.
All right. That brings us up to, actually, before we get to Calm, we talked about the revenue, huge revenue from that. Did you become confident because you made it, because you had enough money in the bank that you weren't going to get wiped out, and so the dangers of life went away? Is that possible?
No. Well, I think we became a bit too confident. We were growing so quickly. We thought we were going to become the next Disney, and we thought that every new IP that we launched after Moshi Monsters would be a success. We learned a really hard lesson. As fast as Moshi grew, it then came down. As kids moved on to mobile, Moshi was no longer the cool thing in the playground. And we went through some very, very stressful times, redundancies, falling revenue. That was a really tough period. I think the kids space in particular is very challenging because it is quite fad and fashion driven. So yeah, learned some really, really important lessons there.
The company's still up and running now. You guys have a mobile strategy for sure, right?
Yes. So we went through some tough times, but as I say, we got a great new leader in place, a really good team. The company's a bit smaller, but we're relaunching Moshi Monsters. We've got a great new brand called Petlandia, which is where you can make your pet into a star and create a book around it and a whole range of other products. So Mind Candy is on its way up again. But wow, what a roller coaster it's been.
Jason Calacanis, our mutual friend and your investor, has this question that he likes to ask entrepreneurs that I'll ask you. Are you a millionaire, cash millionaire?
Yes.
You are. And so yes. Is that, I'm trying to figure out where your calm comes from. I don't know if you noticed, Michael, but my energy level was very high in the beginning because I'm high on your business and I'm high on you as a person. And then it went calm. And throughout the whole thing, I'm watching your personality. A lot of other people, when they see me go high, either shrink or they come high with me. And then when I go back to middle, they come to middle with me. You're always yourself in this, and you're not changing your tone, and you're not like shrinking or becoming an exaggerated sense of you as my mood changes. There's something there. Where does that come from? That confidence, that sense of self, that sense of balance?
Not sure. It's not a conscious thing. I think mirroring is a very important body language, and so it is usually smart to mirror.
But you're not doing it. I'll tell you where it comes from. Me, I definitely have a very good sense of self and confidence and comfort with myself. It comes from having gone through the .com bubble explosion and wondering, where am I if I'm not the guy who is going to build a $438 million business, which is my goal, and then I'm nothing, is what I thought. I said, well, I'm not. I got to figure out how to be something. And then I had to go through this period of like 2 or 3 years of sitting on the beach in Venice and hanging out and riding my bike all day with nothing else to do for like 8 hours and thinking and working on myself. And then I feel like I exited that whole part of my life as a real human being, really understanding who I am completely, but also understanding that there's an evolution and an understanding that keeps growing. Mm-hmm. That's where it came from for me. What about for you?
Do you know what? I think I haven't thought about this, but I think it could be my meditation practice. I think what meditation does is it increases your awareness. And I think you're able to ride the huge spikes, the ups and downs that are part of the entrepreneurial journey much more smoothly. You don't get yanked around by your emotions. And I think calm leaders are great leaders. I think calm friends are great friends. I think in a crisis or in a relationship, being calm, having that place to come to, that stability, that rock, that foundation is really, really valuable. So maybe it comes from that.
All right, let's get into then the calm, and I'll challenge you a little bit about it because I want to understand it. I'm a big believer in it, so it's a challenge as a way of understanding, not challenge as a way of knocking down. All but first, I got to tell you about this thing. I interviewed this guy, James Ashenhurst, and a little while, I guess it's a couple of years afterwards, I got a card from him, a thank you card from him. Who writes cards anymore? James does. So James sent me a card, and he said, Andrew, I've been putting this off for too long. I use TopTal. Because, and he gives me a list of searches, I guess, I can say it. He's got about 100,000 searches a year on his site, and the user experience really sucked. So he hired TopTal to fix it. And the developers over there paired him with a guy, and he gives me the guy's name at TopTal. The developer's name is Stratos. He did a fantastic job. He installed a collective search, which makes sure that that even commonly misspelled words still get results. And also he built a system search functionality and the ability to hand select which posts are ranked for which search terms. I mean, you think about all this. This is the kind of stuff that really has impact on the user experience of a site. And James must have wrestled with this for a while. I know I did. And he heard me talk about TopTal. He's someone who's come into my office, had scotch with me, so he knows that I'm not full of it when I talk about a sponsor, that it's not just about collecting money, but it's also about doing good work. He said, I'm going to try it. If you're out there and you're listening to me, do what James did for his site is Organic Chemistry. Go check out TopTal, whether it's a search issue that you have or any other tech problem. I mean, not tech problem, but any other development problem. TopTal is the best. And I know they're the best because they spend so much of their effort screening out 97% of the people who want to work for them. They want just the top of the top, top 3%. James and so many other people who I've interviewed, who have listened to me at MixerG, wanted great developers. They went to TopTal. They get matched up with a great developer or often team of developers. That's what you need. And you could get started with your developer often right away. Try them out. You'll want to send me a thank you note because you're going to be so happy with the results. Here's the URL where you're going to get something that they're not giving anybody else. If you want to go check out TopTal, go to this special URL where they're going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Top as in top of the mountain, tal as in talent. That's toptal.com/MixerG. I use them, MixerG. James Ashenhurst used them. So many other people that I've interviewed have. I urge you to go check them out. toptal.com/MixerD. First thing they'll do, they'll talk to you on the phone. They'll understand your problem. Then if it's a good fit for you to use TopTal, they will match you with the right person the way they did James. And you can often get started with that person right. For us, it was 24 hours. You can often do it within a matter of days. Go check them out. toptal.com/MixerG. You know, Michael, as I was reading that ad, I saw my mind wander. I saw myself like say, oh, that's not as clear as it could be. I told you before we started this interview that I interviewed Alex Bloomberg of Gimlet. He's a big editor. And so in my head, I said, oh, Alex would totally edit that out. And frankly, that's the part of the mind that meditation helps me with, right? I need to know that stuff is going on and then allow it to just flow through my head and go out. I need to even accept that this ad could suck and not get lost in how crappy it is and be distracted by it for the rest of the interview. That's what meditation does for me.
Yeah.
What does it do for you?
I think a good analogy is going to the gym. We go to the gym and we lift weights and we strengthen our muscles with those repetition. And meditating is almost like going to a mental gym. What you're doing is you're not clearing your mind of all thought. You are observing when a thought comes in and then you are gently sort of moving it out, and then again and again and again, the mind will continue wandering. The more you do that, the stronger your attention muscle becomes, and the more valuable that attention is in everyday life. It's a very simplistic description. You know, the neuroscience behind it is around the amygdala, which is the oldest part of our brain, which is the fight or flight, which many of us are kind of controlled by. We react instead of respond to situations, and meditation pushes some of the power, your control, towards the prefrontal cortex, the more modern part of your brain, which does allow you, as I say, to respond to situations instead of react. You almost have a fraction of a second more to decide how to respond to any stimulation in life, and that changes everything.
I remember trying meditation, that period of my life that I was telling you about, where I just went off and just tried different things in LA. And I would sit there in a room full of other people meditating, and my mind would wander to all the great ideas that I didn't have before, and I should go write them down. And then all the to-do items would come in my head and go, yes, I need to do that right now. And I would have to like either decide to go do it right now or stay focused. And I said, you know what, I'm going to stay here in the moment, and I'm going to stay focused. That means I can't pay attention to the to-dos. I have to let those go. I can't pay attention to how I was an asshole yesterday. I have to let that thought go, because otherwise I can't sit here. And by training myself to have those thoughts but let them go calmly, I became a better meditator. And then when I talked to somebody and a random thought would come in my head, I would know to let that go and stay focused. When I do some work and a random thought would get in my head and it would distract me and I would want to go check Facebook or send an email or something, it would bring me back to my work. That's the upside for me.
Yep. Yeah, no, so true. And there are so many different benefits. You know, meditation, it's worth saying, is not easy. Like anything in life, if you want to be a great entrepreneur, if you want a fit body, if you want to eat healthily, you've got to put the work in. And you've got to figure out how to incorporate it into your daily habits, which is not straightforward. But the benefits shown by science are so many now, from just having clearer thinking, to better focus, to lower blood pressure, to better immune system, to better sleep, on and on and on. These benefits.
But Michael, when I'm talking about meditation the way that I experienced it, the way that I learned it, I'm doing it on my own. I'm allowing the mind to be tempted by side thoughts, and then training it to bring itself back to what I'm focusing on, which is the breath or my mantra or whatever.
Yes.
What you guys do at Calm is guided meditation, where you tell me what to think, where an external voice guides me towards focusing on the voice. Isn't that kind of a cheat that then keeps us from learning how to focus ourselves on the conversation that we're having, on the work that we're doing, on the art that we're creating, on the sale we're trying to close? Isn't that what happens?
It's a good question. So meditating on your own, if you've never done it before, without a teacher or any kind of guide, is extremely difficult. You know, if you're training to run a marathon, you'd have a coach. So what we do at Calm is help you learn the basics. It's almost like training wheels, and then you can take that as far as you want. So the most successful feature within Calm has been something we call the Daily Calm, which is a new meditation that Tamara Levitt, our mindfulness instructor, creates every single day. And a big part of it is silence, so you are quietly meditating, but she tops and tails the meditation with a little introduction, advising you to focus on your breath and relax yourself. And then at the end, she will bring you back to your everyday life with a quote or an inspiration or a technique. So it's kind of like it's someone guiding and helping and advising you, rather than you doing this very challenging practice all on your own.
Do I need to have a membership in order to do that?
So you can do a fair bit within Calm for free, but then to get access to all our deeper content, all the meditations, the Daily Calm, the sleep stories, that is a paid subscription.
Including this thing that you mentioned that happens every single day.
Yes.
Yeah. It's interesting how meditation is one of the few places where people actually pay for content. Essentially, that's what you're doing is content.
Yes. And people are very happy to pay. About a third pay. A third of people who eventually become subscribers do so on day one, which is quite unusual for a digital subscription product.
It is, except what you guys do is you've moved it used to be more free before, right? Before the payment. Now it's essentially you sign up for free, but except for one or two things, you really are paying in order to experience Calm, right?
Well, no, there's a lot behind the paywall. You get a little bit of our stuff for free. And as I say, we think it's great value. It's far less than the price of coffee per day, per week. And compared to the cost of a therapist, learning any new skill, it's worth paying a little bit of money for. So we think it's great value. One of the lessons, one of the things we've learned actually, is that every time we've put our prices up, people have continued to pay. And I think this is a mantra I hear a lot in Silicon Valley. I think Mark Andreessen talks about it. Entrepreneurs are often afraid of charging too much for their product. We're so proud of what we created. We think it's a phenomenal product that we think people are very prepared to pay. And we see a lot of successful net revenue increases every time we do.
You know what? There's so much I want to ask you about. Like, I'm looking at Built With, what the site is built with. I want to understand so much. But why don't I go back to the origins of the business? Why did Alex bring you in? Alex is a competent entrepreneur who's had a track record before, who had a site already built where people, I remember seeing it on Hacker News, people were talking about it and going and sitting and not touching their screens for 2 minutes and being amazed that they did it. Why you? And why would you say yes when you already had a track record of being an independent guy who already had something going on? So let's start with Alex. Why did he need to bring you in?
So Alex has been meditating for many, many years. Ever since he was a teenager, he was fascinated by the brain and personal development. And he got that. The light bulb went on for him a lot earlier than me. I'll be honest, I never really understood meditation until I dove into it, practiced it, and read the science. So we used to live together in Soho with another friend of ours, an entrepreneurial house in the center of London. And Alex and I would play FIFA on the couch most evenings, just chatting about different business ideas. And we were talking about meditation and calm and how we felt there was an opportunity to create something big. And the trigger was when we had the chance to buy this domain name. So we'd always said we wanted to build a business together. We'd worked on many projects, but we felt this could be the first chance that we could do that. We know each other extremely well. We both bring different talents to the table. So I bought the domain name and put a little bit of money into the business and we co-founded it together. And Alex ran it for the first few years in San Francisco while I was still running Mind Candy in the UK. And then about a year ago, I moved over to San Francisco to run it full time with him.
You bought the domain?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And the model, who came up with the model?
It was a bit of both of us. We kind of just battered it around together. And Alex was definitely the more experienced on the meditation and mindful side, and brought on board the first instructors and knew how to structure that. And then just grew from those very early beginnings.
What about Headspace? How much did that influence you?
So Headspace have built a fantastic business. You know, they raised about $34 million about a year or so ago and growing very rapidly. And they tell a great story. They've had a huge amount of press, and Andy is a brilliant teacher. But we're different to Headspace. I think we're not just building a mindfulness app, of which Headspace and Calm are by far the two biggest. There are hundreds and hundreds of apps out there where you can learn meditation. What we're trying to do is build a global lifestyle brand around the idea of calm. A key part of that, probably the most important way to become calm, is through learning meditation. But there are many other ways, from listening to nature sounds or watching beautiful videos, to listening to our sleep stories that we've created, to all these physical products we're going to create down the line. So that's why I think the two businesses may look similar, but are actually quite different.
They do have more users than you, more customers than you.
Yes, but they also have over 10 times as many employees as us, and 20 times as much cash raised. So they do, because they have they started earlier than us, and I think full credit to them. We're in mindful competition with them, and we have a lot of respect for Andy and the Headspace team. They have quite a few more downloads than us and more revenue, but I think we're growing fast as well.
I think that I think that what they have is also a risk in Andy. You notice how many times you mention Andy. He's the voice that you hear when you sign up. He's the person who's on there. It's a big risk for a company that size to be built on one person's personality. Don't you agree?
can be a pro and a con. So, you know, he's a fantastic personality and he has helped the company grow tremendously. But you're right, it can also be a downside. And there are many businesses that have been built on one person that have stumbled. But what I would say is I think we are competing in an enormous market. This is not a winner-takes-all space. It's not like, you know, an eBay or a Facebook, a social network, a network-style business. What we're creating and what Headspace is creating is relevant for anybody with a mind. 7 billion people, from little kids to folks in care homes. And there's going to be many winners in this space that approach it slightly differently. So we wish them the best. And I think their growth helps ours and vice versa.
Michael, when you and I talked, I remember also like badgering you about a lot of stuff. And one of the things I badgered you on was the name meditation and the issues that the baggage that comes with meditation. And you agreed with me on that. And we both agreed that there almost needs to be a better name for it. And the way you guys have done it with the word calm, but you didn't replace meditation with calm because meditation is used throughout your site. What do you think about this branding for meditation and this need for something else? Do you still think what you and I discussed, which is that we need a better name? We need something less with less baggage, but...
Well, mental health is a big, huge issue at the moment, and there's been a lot of stigma around it, and many people have not been comfortable coming forward and talking about it, and doctors and physicians haven't been able to quite know how to deal with it in many instances, and that's changing, and I think that's really, really important on a huge level in Western society. The way we like to term it is more mental fitness, as I keep referring to, like physical fitness. It's second nature that we look after our bodies, but 50 years ago, that wasn't true. Jogging was this crazy new trend that weird people were doing. People didn't realize that you could lead a healthy life by doing physical fitness. And as the science developed, that changed. And we're seeing the same now with mental health and mental fitness. So meditation does come with some baggage and is a loaded phrase, but that is changing. And as I say, this is why we love referring to this as calm. Calm has much less baggage. It's a universal emotion that I think people really appreciate. Spas are a multi-billion dollar business, as is the massage industry, as is kind of chill out music to listen to. It's a big old space.
What's Checky?
So Checky is this brilliant idea that Alex came up with. He's the master of creating ideas that are tangential to a core business that helps the core business grow. So Checky is an app that he and one of our developers hacked together in like a day that basically allows you to tell you how many times you check your phone a day. A bit weird to use your phone to tell you how many times you're checking your phone a day to see how addicted you are to it. And we got a ton of PR for it. It was amazing. And there's a little advert for Calm on it. So it's a very simple way of getting user acquisition.
I see. And did it work?
It worked really well. We were on some mainstream TV shows, The Colbert Show. We got loads of PR for it. So for one day's work, it was very, very, very effective.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the iPhone kept track of that. I use this this app, AutoSleep, that I read about. That as long as I wear my Apple Watch while I sleep, it tells me how well I slept, and I find it really helpful. I didn't realize until I used that app that the iPhone will tell the app how many times I check my phone. So if I wake up at 2 in the morning and touch my phone, it's recorded.
I should hope so. You shouldn't be checking your phone at 2 a.m.
You know what? I intentionally don't, partially because I know the app is watching me, and also partially because I know I got to wake up at a certain time, and I need my sleep.
Yeah. Sleep is such an important area. That's something we're spending a lot of time on at Calm. Again, something that every single human being does every evening. And most of us go to bed, and I used to do this, you know, tapping out one last email, checking my social feeds. First thing I do when I wake up in the morning before I even get out of bed was reach for my phone. You know, I'm not a...
And you don't do that now?
I don't do that anymore. And I used
to. What do you do now?
So now I don't check my phone until I've left the house. I have a shower. I might scribble in my notebook. I'll meditate. I'll have a cup of tea. And it's incredible when you give your mind that freedom to just start running off with various thoughts. You know how when you go on holiday and you give your chance to just relax and rest, you often have your best ideas. It's the same when you just give your mind a little bit of breathing space in the morning. Because if you're checking Twitter first thing in the morning and screaming at your phone because of what Trump has done or some other crazy thing, how are you going to give your mind the chance to come up with those wonderful ideas and go off on important tangents? Most of us don't. So I think that's a mindful way of starting the day that meditation has helped me with.
It's kind of why I want to, I like to go away and leave my technology behind. I like those, like, the 7-day, 10-day no tech meditation retreats. Those are really helpful for me. I just went to the funeral of, why can't I remember his name? The guy who created Digital Detox, Levi.
Felix.
Felix. Yeah. You know what? I was so moved by him, and we didn't know each other super well, but we knew each other for like a decade now. And when he died, I was so moved. I had to go to the funeral, and I see all these people who are crying because they're so deeply moved by him. And one of the things that he did, his biggest thing that he did for everyone, was say, I'm going to create experiences where you're not allowed to touch your phone. You come to a night. I remember going to a night that he did where the first thing they tell you to do is check your phone. Go, what the hell? No one else can touch my phone. Not even my wife can take my phone. But let's try it. And you give the phone. He created this whole experience with no technology. Do you ever go to one of his events?
Yes, I did. I thought he was amazing. I loved what he did with Camp Grounded. And you know,
Whole event where you go and no technology, right?
And you look people in the eye and you connect with them. And you don't kind of swap emails or Instagram accounts. You go into the woods and you bathe in streams and you play guitar late at night. And you rediscover what humanity has been doing for tens of thousands of years. I think that's really, really important.
You leave notes for each other in mailboxes. And,
yeah.
Wow. I feel like that's a thing that you guys are eventually going to do. I had this secret dream that I should be doing something like that, but I don't know if I could get to it. But man, I love that whole experience of let's get away from technology. Let's go to a place where someone's created an experience for us that both is connecting us to the experience, but separating us from the world and getting us back to our own heads.
But here's the important thing. We don't advocate a complete digital detox. You know, these devices, the smartphones and technology is amazing, changing the world in so many wonderful ways, connecting people. The key is our relationship with it. It is how we interact with our technology. And most of us do so in a mindless way. We just whip out our phone without thinking. And when we consciously, and when we have sharp attention because we have a strong meditation practice, we decide when and how and where we use our phone. And I think that makes all the difference.
All right. Why don't we close it out with one thing that you do now beyond meditating to keep your mind focused where you want it to be. Like you talked about how you had that newspaper years ago to help you focus. What else are you doing today to help you focus? Are the beads that you have on your wrist helpful?
I love wearing random stuff on my wrist, but usually it's just from places I visited. So, good question. I love notebooks and I love pens and old school technology. And I think it's so useful to get into a state of flow as often as we can, you know, peak human performance. And most of us find that tough. You know, I go to meetings and everyone has their phone face up on the table or they're taking notes on their laptop. And I think just going into a coffee shop for a couple of hours and turning your phone onto silent allows you to just go deep into crazy ideas. And doing so with a blank page of paper and a pen, I think is really valuable. So every couple of months, I will often on airplanes, I'll just sit with one sheet of A4 and just fill it with everything in my head related to calm. And it's incredible how many ideas kind of flow from that. And then looking back at it over the years of how the ideas have changed and evolved and what we've done and what we haven't. And I think that's a great technique for entrepreneurs.
I get that. That's really a good thing to remember. I used to do that. Just take a notebook and say, I'm not leaving here until I fill up this notebook, or a piece of paper, as you say, on the flight, and say, I'm going to just completely fill it with whatever thoughts are in my head, like a brain dump.
Absolutely. Almost like a mind map. One thing connects to the next and you doodle and you scribble in it. It's a huge amount of fun, but really valuable as well.
All right. If you guys are out there listening to me and you want to check it out, it's just calm.com. One of the first things you're going to get to do is experience meditation, guided meditation, right? And they even say, look, if you've never done meditation before, one of the things I like, Michael, that you guys say is, it has nothing to do with religion, has nothing to do with all this stuff that you're scared of. Here's a walking process. What's that? You're taking a picture
of me? That's my phone with the Calm branding.
I see the Calm branding at the end.
I'm just going to share this with the team on Slack.
One of the first things that you see is a guided meditation. It takes less than 10 minutes. You see the timer. So if you're a little anxious, you're going to see that it doesn't go on forever. But as soon as you let go of your mouse, the timer disappears. Am I right? And you just focus on this beautiful body of water, the woman's guiding you through, and all the things that you would hear if, like me, you went to a session where they guided you through meditation to introduce you to it. You're going to hear on your computer and you'll experience it. And I like the way you guys do that.
Or you can download it in the App Store, and that's a really good experience as well. Or buy the book. So,
right, there are lots of different touch points. Actually, you know what? I wonder why for you, I always I always think of the website. I think it's because the website is so uniquely immersive. Usually the homepage of an app or of a business has all the features of the business and all this. All you guys have is
crammed
this
in. Yeah.
Yeah. All you guys have is this body of water and music. I have to mute my tab every time I open it up while you and I are talking, because it's immersive that way. I like it. I like the way you guys have done things, and I'm proud to have you here on Mixergy. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Good.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you. And thank you all for being a part of Mixergy. If you're listening to me, don't forget three things. First, the two sponsors. If you needed a good developer, a great developer, toptal.com/Mixergy. If you want to finally embrace proper email marketing automation, do what I'm doing. Go use it for free and see what it's like to actually have good email marketing automation, drip.co/Mixergy. And finally, I don't say this enough. If you're listening to me because you just like Michael, or you're just checking out Calm or whatever, and you don't know that you could subscribe to the podcast, do yourself a favor. Subscribe to the podcast. Lots of great interviews, including with Shep Gordon, who I'll be recording with tomorrow. A longtime fan of his. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
Yep. Thank you, Michael, for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.